have a wee bit of a cough going on. And, oh no, it's a man cough. All the men go, oh, I know. Not just a cough, a man cough. And so get your Bibles ready. If I could ask you one question, what's the most important question you think you could ask yourself? Have you ever thought about it? What's the most important question that you need to answer this morning? I'm going to give you a minute to think. See, oftentimes what happens is we don't actually stop in the busyness of life. We don't often stop in the busyness of just what goes on to stop and ask ourselves about the fundamentals. And when you don't stop to ask yourself the fundamentals, what you find is that you drift. And you find yourself very soon off course and going down a path that you were never meant to go down. And sometimes we've got to stop and ask ourselves. And Penny and I had one of these moments during the summer where Penny being hyper-organized and me being organized, but just not kind of on the psychotic end of the scale of organization. Penny came to me and she said, Andrew, church, you know, because I'd had 3 weeks off. For those of you who know our recent history, well, enough said. And it got to the summer and I was like, you know what? I'm going away with the kids. I'm going to chill. I'm going to have a bottle of wine or two. I'm going to, oh, a pastor said wine. Oh, and get over it. And so the thing is, at least I say it from the front. And so the point is, and then Penny, and see when she gets the notebook out, and my heart sinks. It's one of those moments where I think, I would love to stuff that notebook anyway. Because I know what's happening. And then she's learned over the years to go, oh, can we just have a wee chat? I go, no, absolutely not. Because you're going to talk about church, and you're going to try and get me organized. And right now I feel like rebelling. But what happened was, don't shake your head. You know it's true. And anyway, I've got the stage. And so the point is, whether you believe me or not, that's what happens. But we ended up having this conversation, did Penny and I. And it came down to this for me, because I absolutely love this church. I absolutely love Jesus, worshiping him and singing for him. But it came down to this one question. And I don't know what your question is, but my question, the way God put it to us, as we sat that night for 3 or 4 hours on the sofa, didn't move, all right? Notebook out. Because the temptation is to go, right, what are we going to do? So your question might be, what am I going to do tomorrow? Or what am I going to do this week? What am I going to... You're asking the wrong question. How am I going to do? You're asking the wrong question. And Penny and I, I'm going to be honest, we had words that night on the sofa. Okay, our house is not like the Waltons, in case you think, you know, it's kind of like we all sit and sing Kumbaya and the Lord appears and we all get to... It's not like that in our house, it's real life. And we had words that night as Penny said, well, what are we going to do? How are we going to do it? And I was going, I don't know, I don't know, I don't know, because inside I hadn't resolved the question. And I don't know what your question is, but my question is why? Why do I do what I do? Why do you get up in the morning and do what you do? Why? You see, it struck me, and you're going to find this in the Bible actually this morning, that I want to talk about church in the next number of months, and I'm going to take a few weeks to do it. But the fundamental question that I arrived at was, why are we doing this? Because the hows and the whats and everything else will flow out of the why. And so the big question I want to ask you this morning is, why are you here? Why are you here? Why does your life look like the way it does? Not what are you doing in your life or how are you doing it, but why are you doing what you do? Because it strikes me that for us to move forward, the big question that I kind of had to refocus myself on and recalibrate around was simply this. This is why I do what I do. And the hows and the whats and the whenevers and the whens will all fall into place. And I'm going to talk about some of the things that are falling into place in the next number of months. But right now, I want to ask you the question, why are you doing what you do? Not many people ever ask themselves that. What we do is we just get into a routine of life. We go from 1 week to the next, to the next, to the next. And we never actually stop and ask ourselves, what the flip am I doing? Do you know why some of us don't like to do that? Because what we look at will scare the life out of us. It's easier sometimes just to keep busy, isn't it? Paper over the cracks. For goodness sake, don't slow down and don't stop, because if I have to look under any particular stone in my life, I might be terrified with what I see. So what I'm happier to do then is just to keep busy. I'll just keep in the routine. I'll just keep going. I'll keep putting my hands in the air and saying, thank you, Jesus. Not really see any breakthrough or any real forward momentum in my Christian walk. But as long as I don't have to stop and face the harsh truth, maybe, of why my life looks the way it does, well, then I'll just keep going. Those are hard questions, aren't they? Flip, that was a great fun night in our house, let me tell you. Skipped to bed that night for kisses and cuddles, I don't think. But what happened was, sometimes it's like you get there and you go, right, we've got to answer this question. Because I don't particularly care right now as a church what we end up doing. What I'm really concerned is coming back to why we do this. I know there's things that are worth fighting for. There's things that are worth whenever you ask yourself that question. And you might go away from this today going, oh, well, sure, my life is this, 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 this. And you might be on some incredible momentum right now, and that's fantastic. Or you might just be in a routine right now, but I'm going to encourage you at some point today or some point tomorrow morning, stop and ask yourself the question, why am I doing what I do? Because what happens is the truth that we preach week in and week out here will go right over your head if you don't stop and ask yourself the fundamentals first. This is what Paul did. One of the things that for me in this church, let me talk about the church for a while, this family, not the church general up there, but this exchange church. The word has some fantastic wisdom for us today, and it's about what you're going to do with your money, your time, your heart. It's about what you're going to invest your life in. And this is the question that I and Penny and I argued out that night. Because I said, Penny, I am not yet 40. Okay, and so don't look at me disbelieving or you get a slap. I'm a long way off 40. Depending on your measurement. And I was saying to Penny, if this is worth anything, I'm a capable guy. I'm an educated guy. I've got gifts and I've got talents. And I can put those to use anywhere, to be quite frank with you. Now, that's not me being boastful. That's a kind of how I was esteeming myself. I was going, Penny, I can put my hand to stuff and it'll work. I can do that. I'm that kind of guy. Now, is this worth my life? Is it worth it? And I was struck by what Paul said in 1 Corinthians 2, verse 2. He said, I resolved to know nothing while I was with you except Jesus Christ and him crucified. In one of his last letters, Paul would remind Timothy and himself that he, Paul, had once been a blasphemer and a persecutor and a violent man. He said that in 1 Timothy. Before his conversion, Paul had hated Christians with a consuming passion. He had imprisoned them and conspired against them to have them murdered. Paul was a self-proclaimed kind of get-up-and-go guy with gifts and talents and history, everything behind him. But he said this incredible verse. He said, I resolved to know none of that except Christ and him crucified. And it started this process in my mind of going, you know what? Whereas Paul's mission was once to destroy the church of God, he was a man, though, who saw huge change. He was the father of grace. And most of our teachings that we live by today came through the Spirit of God through him. Why? Because he resolved at some point in his life to go, this is why I do this. It's because of Christ and him crucified. And he resolved to know nothing else. You know what God spoke to me about? I'm resolving right now to try to know lots of things in my life. Plans for this, plans of that. And God said to me, no, Andrew, the reason why you do anything is Christ and him crucified. Let me ask you the question. What place does Jesus play in your life today? Now, I'm going to be really straight with you because, honest to goodness, if it's worth an investment of your time, your money, and your life, let me ask you the question that Paul asks. Where is Christ in your life today? What place does he play? Have you resolved, like Paul did, to know nothing except him and him crucified? Have you asked yourself the question why you get up in the morning? If it's not first and foremost about having Jesus and him central in your life, then honestly, the rest of it is a whatever. And that's why I love this church. Why Christ first? Well, really simple, but it's utterly profound. It's not about your ministry. It's not about your calling. It's not about your desires, your wants, your positions, your plans. It's not about your job. Paul continually reminded himself, and I want to remind you this morning, that this church and what I have resolved in my life, that this life, the beginning and the end, was Jesus. That's what we are called for. It is about knowing the King of Kings who gave up everything so that we could live free. I want to tell you, if you're the focus of your life this morning, if Jesus to you is somewhere down the list, if your heart for ministry is trumped by Jesus, you're going to do well. But if your heart for ministry and work and all the rest of it actually is more important to you than Jesus, you're going to be miserable. It's not about that. You will live unhappy, unfulfilled. You'll be proud, critical, and judgmental. Because when you put yourself at the center of your life, that is the fruit of it, according to the Word. When difficult times come in our lives, when it's all about you, you will never succeed. You will burn people, use them, move on, and then you will give up, get bitter at God, or get bitter with the people around you. And so whenever I hear Paul saying this, I resolve to know nothing except Christ. He was saying, listen, the way that you will anchor yourself, and we as a church will anchor ourselves, and you will actually see change and you will see momentum in your life, is when you resolve, before anything else, to know Christ. It will give you a term of reference for everything else. What you do, how you do it, when you do it, who you do it with, will all flow when you answer the question, why you're doing it. It's because of Christ first in my life. Do you understand that? If you're struggling, if you keep going around in circles, if you still keep dealing with habits that aren't broken, if you still have habits that nobody else knows about, and you can, do you know what? If your Christian walk is not helping you to deal with that, if your relationship with Christ has not broken through into those areas, I want to tell you why. You haven't resolved to put Christ first. Now, we can flower it up and go, oh, lovely. We're just battling through. You might have the what you do's, when you do's. You haven't answered why you're doing it. And so for Penny and I that night, when it came to church, I said, Pen, I'll recommit to giving my life to a church and a community that's founded on the grace and the unmerited favor of God. And the reason why is because actually for my life, if I resolve to know nothing except Christ and Him crucified, it refocuses me and re-references me for what my life is really about. And once I put Him first again, and His call, and His truth, and His promise, all of a sudden, I felt myself going, right, this is why I get up in the morning. This is why I'm getting up on a Sunday morning, week after week, or Monday through Saturday, and thinking about the family of God, working in the family of God, trying to create an environment and a community of grace for people. The reason why is because I don't want to know anything else except Jesus. And let me read you from Colossians. Whenever Paul talked about Jesus, it reset his boundary and his compass. I think some people in here need their boundaries and their compasses reset this morning because you're pointing in the wrong direction. We look at this sun and we see God who cannot be seen, he wrote. We look at this sun and see God's original purpose in everything created. For everything, absolutely everything, above and below, visible or invisible, rank after rank of angels, everything got started in him. This is Jesus. And everything finds its purpose in him. He was there before any of it came into existence, and he holds it all together right up to this moment. And when it comes to the church, he organizes it. He holds it together like a head does a body. He was supreme in the beginning and leading the resurrection parade. He is supreme in the end. From beginning to end, he's there, towering far above everything and everyone. So spacious is he, so roomy that everything of God finds its proper place in him without crowding. Not only that, but the broken and dislocated pieces of the universe, people and things, animals and atoms, get properly fixed and fit together in vibrant harmonies. All because of his death, his blood poured out from that cross. You yourselves are a case study of what he does. At one time you had your backs turned to God, thinking rebellious thoughts of him, giving him trouble every chance you got. But now, by giving himself completely at the cross, actually dying for you, Christ brought you over to God's side. And he put your lives together whole and holy in his presence. You don't walk away from a gift like that. You stay grounded and steady in that bond of trust, constantly tuned into the message, careful not to be distracted or diverted, because there is no other message, just this one. Let me tell you, whenever you answer the question, why do I do it? Christ and him first. What you start to understand is your life is so much bigger than a good job. Your life is so much bigger than an understanding spouse. It's bigger than having kids that don't drive you absolutely clean mental. It's bigger than beautiful gardens, nice holidays, wearing all the right labels and clothes. What I understood that night sitting with Penny on the sofa is that in reality, we're part of something immense. And a story that began well before us. We were born into a story that God started, and he'll continue that story after we die. And it's a story of God rescuing humanity, bringing them into his kingdom, progressively shaping them through love and goodness and kindness and mercy into his likeness. What I'm trying to say is it's not about me. Your life's not about you either. Whenever you fix your eyes on Christ this morning and you answer that one question, it's actually two questions. Why are you doing it and who is Jesus? What you start to see is that your life simply fits in to the plan that God had. Because God's plan was about raising Jesus up over this world so that men and women will be drawn to him, brought out of darkness into light, and restored through the grace and the love of God. That's God's plan. Now, whatever your plan is, I'm not really sure, but if it's not fitting into God's plan, then you really need to have a good look. Isn't it amazing? Not only has God saved us, but he's also invited us to participate in his plan of redeeming people for his glory. Through this church, you get part. You know, it struck me. I thought, you know, that night, Penny, it's through our church that we get to be part of God's plan to rescue men and women and see their lives transformed. That's the mission of the church. That's our duty. That's our calling. And actually, it's a privilege. And that's why God put this church in our hearts. You know, I've said before, there's a world full of people dying out there. And the last thing that I want for us is to be like the band on the Titanic. You know, who played manfully on as the whole thing was going belly up and slipping into the icy depths of the North Atlantic. God save us from that. Where we get, you know, it's like, you know, just don't look around. You know, we are sinking very quickly and people are dying all around us, but just keep playing your tune. Honestly, I was just like, God, where there's hurt and there's pain and there's sickness, the Spirit of God says, I've come to bind those things up. There's people out there who don't know God, and it's so straightforward. They need to come into a relationship with Jesus. And our heart here at Exchange, let me remind you, is first and foremost, where people have no clue about Jesus, we want to see them brought into a relationship with him. We want to see them healed. We want to see them restored. We want to see them delivered, and we want to see them set free. That's only the first step. One of the interesting things about Ruth, and I knew that she would do this for me, she would tee up what religious experience is like for people in Northern Ireland. You know, part of me was sitting there thinking, we need to bring back hats. And we need to bring back meetings. All in favour? And frilly dresses. Sweet mercy. Let's get the frilly dresses. But what on earth was that about? I actually went to a Brethren church for a while because my mum and dad weren't saved at the time. And so to get a bit of peace on a Sunday, they used to throw us out to the bus that came round the estate to pick us up. And I went to there. But I can't remember dresses like that. Not that I would have worn them, but, you know, brown crimpling dresses and flares. I think that's a look. We need to go for that. But what are we going to introduce them to? Because the issue is, when you listen to Ruth and her background, there are many great people who have come to faith, many people who love God, but they've struggled in church. They've struggled with the basics of the message and what actually they have been born into. You see, you weren't born in to something which is simply going to meetings, playing the game, hearing about Jesus, but just having him bolted on to number four in your life. You were born into the kingdom of God. That's what this church is about. It's about reestablishing ourselves to say, listen, actually, we put Jesus first and his kingdom first, and everything else flows from that. And whenever you encounter this church, what you're going to encounter is the love and the grace of God first and foremost. And we want to bring you into an experience of John 10:10 life, which is life in all of its fullness. You know, listening to Ruth there, I mean, it was funny that after years and years and years of going to meetings, years and years and years of going to prayer meetings, weeks of children's Bible study, and I'm not knocking any of that, but what happens is when you live in that performance rule-based system, it doesn't really help people to move on. It doesn't really help people to change, and it certainly doesn't help you to deal with life. Let me give you the Bible for that. 1 Corinthians 15:56 says, the power of sin is the law. That's why we do this church. That's why you'll see people ministering in this church who would not get the chance to minister in any other church. Because under a system of performance and a system of the law, they'd be automatically excluded for one reason or the other. Probably myself too. That's why God established this church to go, you know what? First and foremost, you're loved by God. There is grace for you today. And I want you to know that you can bring people to this church and we are not going to judge them or stand over them or make critical judgments over their life. What we're going to do is we're going to introduce them first and foremost to Jesus because we put him first. And then what we're going to do is we're going to allow the Spirit of God to change people. As we love them and we show them grace and we let no debt remain outstanding, according to the word, apart from the debt to love one another, do you know what? All of a sudden we start to create a prophetic community which reflects the kingdom, which is one where you are loved because God loves you, and if that ain't good enough for you, well, nothing will change you. That's why we do this. That's why I'm here today. Honestly, I want to reestablish this in our minds. There are many places to go this morning and do the Christian thing. If that's what you want to do, fair play to you. It's easy to get wrapped up in church life, and that's what it can be all about. Very easy to be busy and do meeting-itis. But around the world right now, I believe that there is awakening around the full heart of the gospel. The gospel that God is good, that you can live in the good news and not just hear about it. And for Penny and I, whenever we started to experience that in our own lives, that's why we wanted to do church community. You know, whenever God started to move in us 10, 12 years ago, and started to put something in Penny and I about, you know what, there's so much more to your Christian walk than this. You don't need to play at being a Christian. You don't need to be in an environment whereby if you happen to mess up, then you are excluded. You don't need to live in an environment whereby you can't actually just be yourself for fear that you're going to be excluded by the people of God. You know, we don't want that. I want you to go and invite your friends, invite your family into a community where we love people and we accept them first and foremost. Because God knows that's the only thing that's ever going to change anyone. That's what it says in Psalm 92:13. Those who are planted in the house of the Lord will flourish in the courts of our God. That's why we want to do this community. Let me tell you something. You will never flourish outside the kingdom of God. You'll never flourish outside the church of God. And whatever your hang-ups might be about church, get over them, please. Honestly, let me be really straight with you. Get over yourself. I have more hang-ups than any of you put together about the church. But you know what God says to me? The only way I'm ever going to flourish is in the church, is in the courts of God. That is described in the temple in the Old Testament. And so it's up to us, and it's beholden on us this morning to go, whatever our experience up until now, this is a new day. The Spirit of God, when he meets with me, says he binds up my wounds and he sets me free from prisons of the past. So I am free to establish a community of grace in Belfast that when people come here, they don't get judged, they don't get talked about, they don't get criticized, but they encounter God and in his promises, in his presence and in his power, and God changes them. That's why we're doing this. I don't want to play at being, I can't be bothered playing at church. And this is what I was communicating to the Penny that night. I could fill the calendar, the church calendar, with a million programs. I could fill the church calendar with a million brilliant programs. And all of a sudden, in the heart of it, you understand we have died because we haven't resolved. This is what we're doing because Jesus is first. This is why we do. But I want to encourage you. You see, I can talk about this all day, but when I tell you that you'll never flourish outside of the church, you might go, oh, well, I don't know. God knows I've had many opportunities recently to put two fingers up and walk away. But I want to tell you, the Spirit of God, when he ministers to me, keeps saying to me, Andrew, this is the plan. Whenever you feel like that, what you've done is you've made you the center and Jesus is no longer the center. Because whenever I put Jesus back in his place in my life, I see that he loves this church, that he died for this church, that there's no plan other than this church and the church general. Do you understand me? And so I recalibrate around that and I go, once I've established that, I go, Jesus, now tell me, what kind of church are we going to have? If there's no other plan and I'll only flourish in the community of God, what kind of church are we going to have? And that's when we come to the church that teaches about the love and the grace of God. I love some of my favorite verses. I'm not ashamed. The last few weeks, somebody said to me actually after last week that it was a brave thing to pray for Janice McCartney. And I'll not tell you who it was because they're not here this morning. And I thought, hold on a minute. Let's be perfectly clear. I feel a wee bit like Paul in this respect. In Romans 1:16, he said, I'm not ashamed of the gospel. I'm absolutely not ashamed of the gospel. I'll stand in front of anybody who's sick and I'll pray for you. Why? Because I'm not ashamed of what Jesus has done. And if I happen to look like an idiot because you don't grow your leg back, that would be a tricky one. To be fair, if you've got a wee sniffle or a cold, do that one, okay? But let's be honest. Let's be honest. Some of us sometimes are ashamed of this gospel. A wee bit embarrassed. Maybe not ashamed, that's too strong. How do I know? Did you encounter anyone who was sick this week? How many of you laid hands on them and prayed for them? I'm not trying to make you feel bad. What I'm trying to do is examine our hearts to go, that just tells me Jesus is not first. Because when Jesus is first, you don't give a monkey's what the people think. Because you know what Jesus says. It's time for us to grab ourselves by the scruff, not to create or to work, but to go, if this is worth anything, I'm not going to go around in circles again with the what's and the when's and how we're going to do it and let's have Wednesday nights and do this, that and the other. Why are we doing it? To lift Jesus up. Whenever I lift Jesus up in my own life and my focus comes back to him, all of a sudden it starts to fit into place for me. I love the unmerited favor of God. I love the grace of God. Do you know why? I'm not ashamed of it. It's the only thing that will give part of your Christian walk. Condemnation, law, guilt, works, self-effort will never work. They will leave you frustrated. They will leave you disappointed. They will leave you feeling not worthy. And to the measure that you feel those in your life each week, that's the measure that you're living under the law still. That's where grace needs to break in for you. Because Romans 5:17 tells us, because of one man's trespass, death reigned through that one man. Much more will those who receive the abundance of grace and the free gift of righteousness in life, reign in life through that one man, Jesus Christ. So I want to encourage you. Today, over these next number of months, I'm going to talk about what we're going to do. But I want you to understand, it's not about what we're doing, it's about why we're doing it. I want you to understand the church that I see in my heart again. And it has been kicked from one end to the other, to be honest. To the stage where during the summer, Penny and I go, now there's never a thought of us, we're walking away. No, please don't misinterpret. You mean, it's like a wee bit like being married, this church for me. You know when you're married, you know when you're going out, your biggest fear is when you have an argument, oh, she's going to walk away on me. You know the way most, like, even people before they get married, their heart's scared sometimes of actually saying the truth to one another, case to clear off. Anyone? Well, is that just my experience? But you know what I mean? When you're first going out, it's all like nicey-nicey and, oh, we don't offend and all that. And what's wrong with you? Oh, nothing, dear. I'm fine. I'm going to kill him. That stuff. All right? Then when you get married, and we're married, we're in our 17th year of being married. I know it's hard to believe, isn't it? Big gasp. And now we can fight the bit out. All right? Not physically, but you know, we can talk very strongly with one another. Why? Because we're married and we ain't going anywhere. You know, you're stuck with me, dear. You're my wifey for lifey, and this is it. And all of a sudden, it breeds in us a confidence that we can push, you know, where we're really at. Why? Because we're married and that's established. And so I want to make that clear as I talk about this today, when I talk about the church. All right? That it's okay to have those robust conversations and ask yourself the question, why am I doing it? Because what it does is it helps to reestablish and refocus and recalibrate why you get up every morning and do what you do. Do not be afraid this morning to ask yourself that question. Why am I doing it? Why am I part of Exchange? Why did I come here? Hopefully your heart is aligning with the message of God's grace and love. And we're going to preach the life out of that in the next number of weeks and months. Because that is the heart of what we do. I want to say very quickly, it's really important to keep yourself in the goodness of what Jesus has done. It's really, really important to keep yourself in the goodness of what Jesus has done for you. What do I mean by that? Well, in Isaiah 53:6, it says this, we have all like sheep have gone astray. We have turned everyone to his own way. And the Lord has laid on him the iniquity of us all. What do I mean? Let me explain it. There are specific sins here this morning, and we don't really talk that way, that none of us have ever committed. Murder, for example. If you have murdered someone in here, fair play to you. You obviously haven't been caught. But one thing in common, we may not all be murderers in here, but one thing in common is this. We've all, at some stage and to different degrees, turned our backs on God at times. Isn't that right? Now, the Hebrew word for that in Isaiah 53:6 is Avon. Translated roughly as iniquity in English, but the closest word actually in English is rebellion. So what it's saying here is the primary cause for all of the curses that we come under in our life, and most of them are listed in Deuteronomy 28, is our rebellion towards God. But rebellion doesn't actually convey the full meaning. Because what happens is, you see it with your kids. Ben, go and do that. No. That was an act of rebellion, wasn't it, against me as his dad? Now, that's not Avon in the Bible. Avon means when I say, whenever you rebel against God and you say, God says, do this or live your life this way, this is what I have for you. And whether for whatever reason you decide not to do that, that is an act of rebellion. But actually, the consequences of that rebellion are the most important thing. So Avon, what it means is it's not just the fact that you put two fingers up to God at some point, but then what happens is everything that comes as a result of that into your life is covered by this word iniquity. What it means is the consequences of your actions and not just the action itself. But what this says here is that all the hurt, the pain and the sickness, the disease, the war, the pride, the depression, the fear, the worry, the stress, the unforgiveness, the bitterness, all of that stuff is a result of our rebellion towards God. But this community is different. What we actually have a message is to say to people that you can walk in the wholeness and the goodness of the cross. Let me be absolutely clear that every single evil consequence of your rebellion towards God has been dealt with. And you don't need to live in it. That's not the message that people hear in this world today. What they hear is if you do, then God will bless. Get yourself sorted, then God will do. I actually believe that that is going to tie people up continually in religion and nonsense and never set them free. That's why this church is different. All of your rebellion and all of the acts that come from the rebellion in your life have been dealt with by Jesus and you can live free of them. Isn't that an incredible message? Think about that. I've thought about it for me this week. Whenever my mind has wandered, whenever my mouth hasn't been as good as what it should have been, whenever at times I've thought about people and I haven't honored them and blessed them. And God says to me, you know what? Despite that, I'm choosing to bless you and to have you walk in wholeness. See, every time I'm arrested with that thought, I start to change. My bitterness actually starts to subside. I feel God healing my heart. Not as I concentrate on what's wrong with me, but I concentrate on how incredible he is. That's what this church is about. Some of you don't get it yet, but we're going to reestablish it. In the New Testament, the word is soteria. It means deliverance, preservation, safety, and health. It's complete and it's holistic, and we're not ashamed of it. That is why we do church. To introduce people who either religiously or whatever way have had no encounter with a God who really truly loves them. Who still measure themselves based on what they do and therefore what God's going to do to them. That old awful way of thinking has got, I believe, to go. We need to rid ourselves of it and establish a community of God's grace and love where God does the changing, God does the ministering, and we provide the soil where people can grow. Yeah? That's why we do this. There's only two ways to live your life. I'm going to be finished in 4 minutes. Depend and trust entirely on God's grace and unmerited favor, not just to save you, but to change you. Keep looking at Jesus central in your life and everything changes. You can live that way or you can put trust in yourself. Self-confidence, good works, and your own efforts, where self is your strength. Let me tell you what the word says about that in Jeremiah 17. Cursed is the man who trusts in man, who draws strength from mere flesh, and whose heart turns away from the Lord. That person will be like a bush in the wastelands. They will not see prosperity when it comes. They will dwell in the parched places of the desert, in a salt land where no one lives. But blessed is the one who trusts in the Lord, whose confidence is in him. They will be like a tree planted by the water that sends out its roots by the stream. It doesn't fear when heat comes. Its leaves are always green. It has no worries in a year of drought, and it never fails to bear fruit. Those are incredible verses. Jeremiah 17, 5 through 8. That's what this church is about. That's what we're going to talk about, we're going to sing about, we're going to program around in the next few months. Creating a place that, despite that there may be drought all around you right now, it might be in your finances, might be in your workplace, might be in your ministry, I don't know. But when we trust in God, he is the one who brings fruit into our lives. And despite the fact that everybody else might be working hard, doing stuff, all the rest of it, I want to see us prospered and blessed and fruitful. Why? Because we put Jesus first. Now, I can do that from the church's point of view, but I can't do it for you. Whenever you walk out of those doors today, that's your choice, not mine. You need to ask yourself that one question. Why am I doing this? Where's Jesus? What place has he got in my life right now? Because all the what's that we throw out, I'm going to take 2 minutes to do it now. All the when's are not going to make any sense to you. It's going to feel like law and I have to do. And rather than going, I get to be part of something incredible that Jesus is establishing.